player and compulsive overeater, limbic and restrictor. And I was going to wing it today. I thought, okay, I'm just going to open my mouth and see what falls out. I can speak from the heart rather than speak from the head. But then on the 220 meditation meeting, I read Voices of Recovery. So I'd like to read that to begin this today. 27th of October, Voices of Recovery. When I put aside what I knew, I suddenly saw what I had missed by closing my mind. It's from 4 Today, page 89. An old 12-step adage, program adage says, there are none too dumb for this program, but plenty who are too smart. The years prior to coming to OA, I was one of those smart ones. I knew about OA, but I still clung to the misconceptions that I could control my eating by myself. There was no God. Since entering program, it's taken years to allow more and more of the truths of the program to permeate my defensive armor. I've had to set aside many preconceived notions, much book learning and rationalization along the way. I now have a truly three-dimensional life as compared to the flat plane of existence I once endured without knowing any better, as bright as I was. Thank God for striking me dumb. That kind of becomes this morning, I thought, I really want to share on that. I grew up being incredibly obnoxious and pretentious as a child, out of necessity, to be honest. It was a people-pleasing, caretaking thing. I was never, ever good enough. And I truly believe that the first word that I spoke was why. I wanted the answers to absolutely everything. I thought I could learn my way into this world and into some kind of connection with people. And that got me into all sorts of trouble as a child, to be honest. So how did this all begin? I'm not one of those who grew up with any body image issues that I can recall. I found all of my addictions actually at the age of 13 after a sexual assault, which I randomly vomited after this. And as I did that, all of the pain, the shame, the fear, and the anger just left me. And I was left with this feeling of absolutely nothing, total emptiness, physical emptiness, emotional emptiness. And that was my answer. That was how I decided to fix my feelings. And that was the beginning of my bulimia. It was kind of hits me every time I talk about that, because it was not a good start to my teenage years. I slowly started to see more truths about the dysfunctionality of my family. My grandmother's suicide, my mum's addictive behaviours, like watching year by year, my dad gradually realising his own powerlessness over his marriage. It was a kind of an emotionally abusive and at times physically abusive marriage, and his inability as a father to protect me from myself, which was painful, because I hero worshipped my dad, absolutely, totally hero worshipped. He was my rock. And I think I was kind of the same thing for him, to be honest. Like we were really, really close. And then I kind of gradually discovered that all through my young life, I was carrying the emotions of my family. I was actually said in a family therapy session that I was my mum's life raft and my dad's like only cheerleader. So that's how I found how to fix my feelings, however inadequately. I found the 12-step fellowships, not this one, another one, as it started out, when I was 18. I was completely and utterly suicidal. My life was a mess. I was a mess. And I ended up in a church underneath the altar, with a big bag of food and a big bottle of vodka. By the way, alcohol and drugs are part of my story as well. And the vicar's wife found me, lifted up the cloth. I was underneath the altar because there was a christening at the back of the church, and I got cornered. So I just wanted to hide, like I always want to hide. I want to hide from life all of the time. So I was hiding. She found me, and about 5 days later, she drove me down the road. She dropped me off at the local town hall, and she said, "This is where you belong." It was a 12-step fellowship meeting, and that was at the age of 18. That was my first experience of the steps. It didn't settle. I didn't work it. I didn't leave. Oddly enough, I kept dropping back into various different fellowships as my addictions moved on and on and on and on. The food was always there, but I didn't see the food as the same thing as the drug and alcohol addiction. I could see that was making my life unmanageable. I could see that was completely screwing my life up, and that I was powerless over that. But I still believed I had my food addiction totally compartmentalized. It was different. I had control, and I would not admit that that was a problem. So how did I find OA? I was in a rehab center for drugs and alcohol, and OA came in every month. We had a panel, OA panel, that came in, and I'd heard them speak a couple of times and like, "Nope, that's not for me. That's not for me. That's not for me. I'm in control. You're not taking this food. You're not taking the food away from me. I need it. I need this to survive in life. I need my bulimia. I need to be fixing my feelings, and I need this to make me feel half sane," which was quite ridiculous because I was hardly sane at the time. I heard a share came in, one day, and this was, so I've skipped over the entire 20 years of the same shit over and over again, expecting different results. No point me talking about that. It just got worse and worse and worse. So I was in this rehab center. I think I was about 43 at the time. So I've got a good 25 years of active addiction under my belt, and I was dying. Basically. And this woman, she came in, she said, "My name is, I'm a bulimic, I'm a compulsive overeating and bulimic." And my ears pricked up, and I heard her, and I started to listen. And although it wasn't the same story that was my story, it was one that I heard and I listened to. And I felt compelled in this room of other addicts, not just compulsive overeaters. There were a few in the room, as it turns out. And I put up my hand and I said, "I'm Claire, and I think I may have a bit of a problem with food." And that's where I got my step one in my head. I kind of admitted I was powerless over food and that my life had become unmanageable. Is an understatement of the year. I was so actively bulimic in that. And I said to them, "I'm in this treatment center. Everybody in this room considers themselves to be in recovery. I don't, because I am still fixing my feelings. I'm not fixing them with what everybody else in this room may be fixing them with. I'm actively bulimic in this treatment center," and I completely outed myself. I then got sent to OA every Saturday morning in the taxi. "Off you go. You're going to OA." So I had my step one in my head. And that was an important move for me to make, to have it in my head. I didn't get it into my heart until talking to another fellow outside the nursing office who was justifying and rationalizing her eating disorder. And I was calling her out on her bullshit. Then I realized that's what I keep saying to myself. And then my step one went from up here, getting it in my head, to down here, finally settling in my heart. Then I switched it around. Thank
That's
you.
10 minutes.
I switched it around after that. it wasn't so much about, I always hold on to this. It's not so much about admitting I was powerless over food and my life had become unmanageable. I was powerless over life and my food had become unmanageable. Let's take a moment here. So I read that reading today because I was trying to think my way out. I've always tried to think my way through the steps. I did the steps in different programs. And I'd never truly conceded my powerlessness. I'd never, ever surrendered to the program, to a higher power. I'm an agnostic, so that was an interesting journey. Until a couple of years ago, when I found the right sponsor, basically, and I worked the program in OA. Working it in other fellowships was helpful, but wasn't the answer because I was still using food. I was still fixing my feelings with food, like I learned at the age of 13. This fixes my feelings, and I continue to fix them. So where am I now? I'm not going to go through the rest of the steps. I've done that before. I went through the steps with my sponsor and I did them honestly. I actually did them honestly. I'd stopped kidding myself that food wasn't my primary addiction. I'd stopped trying to hold on to it, trying to keep hold of that one thing that I thought was going to make me feel better, and it never did. And I asked our lovely secretary to put off this share. I was supposed to share last month. I asked her to put it off so that I could sit here and say 2 years, which is nothing short of an absolute miracle. I do not know to this day. I'm not entirely sure how I've managed to pick up this 2 year chip. I don't know how I picked up the 1 year one, to be honest. I do know that it's because I totally and utterly surrendered. Absolutely, totally surrendered. Today, my weight is none of my business. 20 years ago, that scale in the bathroom is no longer in the bathroom, by the way. That was my higher power. It was the first thing in the morning when I got up, before I'd eaten, and to be a little bit crude, after I'd been to the bathroom, just to make sure that everything was removed from my body. Before I binged, during my binge, after I binged, to make sure that my weight settled back down, have I purged enough food? 20, 25, 30 times a day. And it was my higher power, absolutely my higher power. Today, I don't want to know. The only person who knows my weight is my doctor, because she medically needs to know what my weight is. The only weight that I actually need to lose today, I might want to lose weight, but the only weight that I actually really need to lose is the weight that's between my two ears. It's the stinking thinking. It's the overthinking. It's the overanalysis. It's the thinking that I know better. It's the I've got the answers when I know I haven't got the answers. I've tried to find the answers for years and years and years, and I've never, ever got a solution until I came to these rooms. And in these rooms, through the 12 steps, through coming to meetings, through listening to everybody's wisdom, everybody's experience, strength and hope, I found solutions that I could not possibly have worked out for myself. There is no way in a million years that I could have sat down with a pen and paper and a textbook and found the answers, found the solution that I found in these rooms. It just would not have been possible. So that's why Voices of Recovery spoke to me today. And today I've got over the feeling of that I'm not good enough.
5 minutes.
Thank you, Em. It's no longer like the sole focus of I've got to be better than, I've got to be better than I am, I've got to be better than you, I've got to know all the answers, I have to be the wisdom in the world and all of that absolute bullshit that I grew up with. I don't need to be that. I am enough just the way that I am. And that's still a struggle for me to accept, but it's something that is more, it's no, it doesn't feel impossible to accept now that I'm okay just for being me. That as long as I do the next right thing, that's enough. As long as I'm abstinent, I'm sober, I'm in recovery, and that I'm doing service, which is very, very important for me in my recovery. Service is massively important for me. I've received so much from this program, so much. And it would just be wrong for me not to think that I have a duty to give back everything that I was freely given. And I was freely given everything that I've got, the life that I have today, the fact that I am still alive. That was freely given to me by the fellowship, and by all of you. And for that, I am eternally grateful. Thank you for allowing me to share today. Thank you for me being alive today. And without all of you, I would not be breathing, to be able to randomly share this rambling chat today. I hope some of this made sense, and I hope if there's one person in this room who one thing touched and reached out to and helped you today, then I'm happy with my share today. Thank you so much. Love you all.